listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, April 30th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, hello, Michael. I'm happy to be here as always.
Also happy to have you, and so happy to have everybody in our live chat. Always appreciate getting to catch up with you, appreciate your contributions. And as always, we want to thank everybody that takes the time to catch up with us from the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, tonight, looking forward to our topic, we're going to be having a very interesting discussion of time and memory, and how all of these kind of concepts are intertwined. But, yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Maybe we can head the show off with saying happy birthday to Dr. O.
Yeah, good call. Absolutely. Yeah. Tomorrow, I'm guessing the first is going to be Dr. Allen's birthday, so happy
Beltane.
Birthday.
Yes. That's Beltane for pagans. So it's like a spring celebration, new life, beginnings, you know, planting time.
All that stuff. Very cool.
That's yeah. Great. And that's when you tie ribbons around a pole and they all dance around the pole.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know,
fun stuff.
Great segue to talk about time, too, and our, you know, perceptions of it, how we track things, you know, how we break up the years that pass, right? Time is such an interesting concept. You know, Dr. Allen's birthday is coming up. You know, how many years is that going to be? How many years do we have each of us already lived? How many years do we have left? It's all such an intensely real, visceral, you know, kind of materialist thing, time. You know, you can measure it. You know how much has passed, you know, but at the same time, it's so abstract. You know, the fact that we use 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, you know, 24 hours in a day based on, you know, how fast the Earth spins on its axis, a year, how long we go around the burning ball of, you know, gas fusion that is itself moving through the galaxy, you know.
Well, you know, it's... I think that time is, well, you know, in many metaphysical circles, there is no time, right? We make it linear. But I think in a reality, and that's kind of a, you know, one of those collective realities where we live in time, we give calendar years and, you know, we have seasons and, you know, that kind of thing where we measure time and we measure space-time. Yeah, there's lots of ways we measure it, but essentially there is no time, at least when it comes to memory. You know, you think about something and it happened yesterday, but, oh, that was 30 years ago. which led me, I really wanted to look this up, and I knew most of this, but refreshing my memory. In basic generalized psychology, you put human memory into sensory short-term memory, which is like a working memory, and then there's a long-term memory. And that's where it gets really interesting when you're talking time, because they break it down to explicit and implicit. Now, that implicit then kind of goes to a procedural memory. So if you stay with me on this, implicit is unconscious. And like somewhere in our DNA, we know to get up and learn to walk. But other things, like you learn to ride a bike, you never lose that memory. You use a fork, you know how to use a fork. So there's basic tasks, any kinds of skills that we learn, and that kind of falls into that implicit procedural kind of memory that we have. We just automatically think that way. And the explicit memory is a consciousness where get into facts and events, and episodic memory of events and experiences, or semantic memory, which are facts and concepts. And so it kind of is broken down that way, but the implicit we just automatically do. And we continue to learn things, and it just becomes embedded in your psyche. But the explicit, I think, is where we get kind of messed up with relationship to time. You know, because it all kind of goes into one. You know, it just becomes a part of our experience of life. So in there is also like the emotions of it. And not just facts and figures, but
I think it's primarily emotion, really.
Yes, look, we can get even more complicated than this, because there's different parts of the brain that stores different information.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could really break this down. But if we think simply that, because I take it to, again, another place, but simply that our brains and our bodies are working. And you think about the implicit, where we learn tasks. Well, there's muscle memory involved.
Yeah.
Cellular memory involved. And I think this is where cellular memory and explicit memory kind of do a dance together. At least that's my take on it. So if you had, let's say, a trauma when you're a child, and you remember it a certain way, and through the life and eyes of a child, you're going to remember it through those eyes, if that makes sense. So, but that may not be actually what happened.
Yeah.
And I know years ago I told this story when my son had a little friend over who's about 8 years old, and he'd had the flu. But he was getting over it. He came over. We had big pancakes for lunch, and he threw up. And he went home saying Vicky's pancakes made him sick. Now, that's a classic example of he threw all those experiences into one compartment, and it got mixed up with the emotional memory, physical memory, and, you know, what was in front of him.
Yeah.
And partly that procedural memory. And what happens with memory then and time is eventually he'll kind of forget that Vicky's pancakes made him sick. But every time he looks at pancakes for years, he's going to say, oh, I don't know about pancakes. Or if a name like Vicky comes up, he's going to feel nauseous. That's how we store information when the experience may not have been true at all.
You know, it's so funny you say that. I mean, our memory does not have to be factually 100% accurate. It's so closely tied to emotion, because it's the emotion that really drives us. We like to think it's our intellect, but it's really emotion. And, you know, an emotional visceral reaction, you know, like you just mentioned that about pancakes in the future for this kid. I remember back when we were still living in South Dakota, so it must have been, you know, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10. I got the flu really bad, and I got really sick to my stomach. And the thing that I'd ate just prior to getting really sick to my stomach were these, I can't remember what they're called, they're little tortillas filled with, like, queso and different stuff, like taquitos or something like that. But, you know, you bake them, and what have you. So I'd eaten some of those, and then I got really sick, and I was throwing up. I couldn't look at them, smell them, or taste them for years. And that is a very evolutionary response to anything that you might eat that might be poisonous. You know, stay the heck away from that. But
I think
again,
I was 4 or 5 when I had a cranberries with turkey. To this day, I can't eat canned cranberries.
Oh,
cranberries,
that's a shame.
At all.
That's a shame. Cranberries are awesome. Much better than coconut.
No, but I'm just saying, it's like you and coconut. You know?
Well, and here's the other thing about coconut. You know, I mean, one of the things, why do I not like it? I don't know. Maybe it's also, you know, it's weird, but, you know, one of the things I associate it a lot with is, you know, like suntan lotion and the smell of, you know, like my mom when she would do this stuff and go to the tanning bed, and she would get into these moods, and this is my biological mother who was, you know, an alcoholic, and, you know, I would associate kind of that smell and that kind of thing with, you know, when she would get drunk and she would want to, you know, do things with, you know, like go out, and it would always be like this suntan lotion that she'd put on. It was, I don't know, it was just associated memory. It's probably why I don't like coconut so much.
Ah.
I'm really thinking about it. But again, memory is one of those things that it's not so much about the hyper accuracy of it, you know, because most of our memories are going to be twisted to from our perspective, our emotional feeling at the moment, and for the fact that when you're feeling emotions, you know, you're not always perceiving reality around you, you know, accurately.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because you're perceiving it through a lens. And, you know, this is a big reason why eyewitness testimony has become so, you know, understandably flawed, because human beings are flawed things. Life is.
Yeah.
Memory is not perfect. You know, so, and there's so many things to tie in when it comes to time and
you know, Wendy's brought up a really good point in the chat. Time definitely has an effect on explicit memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say implicit as well. And it's part of the memory that is severely impaired with Alzheimer's. And my grandmother, bless her heart, died when she was 94. And I was in Alberta at the time, and I traveled to Saskatchewan once a year to go see her at the home. And she was getting really bad. She'd start talking about her childhood. And I had the most wonderful conversations, Michael. I would just zoom right into her reality, ask her all kinds of questions. And she, you know, about her brother and the farm and, you know, her mother. And I don't know, as long as you don't fight that with folks, because that's where they are, you can have a great experience. It's just when you try to pull people into your timeline, your reality, is when there's a struggle. But you're right, Wendy, that's a really good point. And that's the grandmother also. I know I've said this before. I asked her if she believed in reincarnation. She said, oh, I wouldn't want to do this again. I said, well, Grandma, what if you took all your memories with you? Oh, well, maybe that wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah, it's, you know, I was just about to say, the fact that you can't remember almost makes it better in a lot of ways. You know, think about all the accumulated traumas and things like that that you'd carry from life to life to life. Also, the very fact that infinity is a heck of a thing.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, the very fact, I've said it before, I think, on this program, to where if conscious beings are just pure light, energy, and thought, and we can exist outside of this materialist linear existence, it would almost be like a vacation to load up a life. You know, spend, you know, some decades on Earth just, you know, having no memory of what came before, and almost like a relief, right? Because it's different than the immensity of infinity.
Mm.
Everything experienced, everything done, every possibility explored, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
But, you know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, when it comes to time, too, I think, you know, how we conceptualize time is also a big part of how we think of things. I can tell you, being a child at school, you know, watching that clock go around was such a huge part of the day, just waiting for school to be over, waiting for something to happen, waiting for summer to come. And I always get so interested in sometimes the the minutiae of why we do things the way that we do them. We were talking about this just before the program. There is, very old societies, the Egyptians, the Babylonians, really the Mesopotamia, they had a base 12 counting system, which is because if you look at your hand and you take your thumb, you can use your thumb to count the different sections of your fingers, four fingers on a hand, three sections to a finger, 12. And then with the other hand, count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. Put a finger down every time you count one round until you get to 5, that's 60. You do it in kind of a measured pace, there's 60 seconds in a minute. And, these things kind of, think about it in the existence of humanity for hundreds of thousands of years, yeah, where time wasn't measured really like that at all. I mean, hours weren't even hours until, the Greeks to a point. And then much later than that even is when it became standardized. But it's just fascinating, and it shapes kind of how you look at things. When you look at things from minute to minute, second to second, you're focused on all the activities in your day versus when you look at things from season to season, hunting season, gathering season, planting mm-hmm. season.
Yeah.
It shapes the way that you perceive life around you. So
for sure.
Some interesting thoughts that I had.
Dr. Owen has mentioned, and I'd like to touch on this one, Michael. I've been having some weird memories lately. It's more like psychic memory. I feel like I did when my grandmother was alive. Same thing with my mother's energy. It isn't like a memory over time because it isn't tied to any specific event. Yeah, I'm I have those too, Ione. You're not alone. And I do think there's something about age, Michael, and it started for me a few years ago that I'd have flashes of childhood, things I hadn't thought about since they actually happened. And I went, whoa, I've never thought of that before. And it's really so many of us who get older start remembering life. And I think it's a loop. It's that loop of time. And that's where we get into the memory and time relationship, that it's a perception and a review of life. And I think, honestly, I think we all kind of do that nearing end yeah. of life. And so, or get those feelings or a sensation. I remember walking in a tall field and running my hands over the wheat, and I had this flash of being a kid walking in the wheat fields and the feeling of it, but I can do that even sometimes it'll happen in my mind and mm-hmm. get that sensation. But I think it is all these loops of time, and it teaches us something, remembering things in a different way.
Yeah.
And not just for healing. I think, if that's a requirement for somebody, but it's also about perception and closing little empty spots. and kind of getting an overview as opposed to being in the moment of experience and tossing that into a memory. I know Wendy had said something earlier in the chat about two people can have the same experience almost at the same time and have a completely different, memory of it or mm-hmm. take on it. And that's because of perception.
Yeah.
But you ask them again a week later or a year later, they'll say something different. It's fascinating. How is it that, let's say, six kids from a family, all raised the same, but not really, all have a completely different take on their upbringing?
Right.
Because each child is experiencing something very different, depending if you're number one or number four. And the parents change as well, the more children that they have. So everything is really, it's really quite different. So Dr. Jerry has mentioned to add here, Dr. Allen, the veil is lifting and we're remembering again. And she, Ione, is saying that she appreciates Jerry saying that. It makes her feel a little nervous at times, but she hadn't thought of that. And it is, we get stuck in a physical reality. And the more we let go of control of that physical reality or our attachments to it, the more we become sensitive, intuitive, And think, you know, it's like the small stuff doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
We just don't care. Our view of time and memory changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know my kids have talked about things that didn't happen, or my motives and my parenting. And I said, well, that didn't happen that way. That's not why I did that. She goes, oh, I like my memory better.
Well, there goes another really big part of memory, isn't it? A lot of times, things that you use as kind of keystone moments to build your sense of identity, those things cannot be tampered with. That's why it's so hard to challenge belief, because belief forms identity, and identity is, you know, critical to how we view ourselves in the world. So a lot of times, a person's memory of how something happened is indicative of their emotional state at the time, and it was formative, and they need things in for their sense of self to have occurred that way.
Yeah, true. You know, Howard has said something that's a great segue into another thing I'd like to address tonight. He has stated, my siblings have different ages for their earliest memories. My sister does not remember anything before her 8th birthday. I remember things starting at around 18 months. Now, that's fascinating. My second daughter has very little, if any, memory of her childhood. But she came in with a lot of, like, what I call past life memory. She could speak a different language. She had all kinds of fears. I even worked doing some hypnosis with her, even when she was, you know, of age that was safe. Being burned at the stake, fires, you know, they're out to get me, all that stuff. A lot of fearful things. And she was always afraid of running out of food. And, you know, where did that come from? Is that some kind of DNA ancestral memory?
Right.
Past life? If she didn't speak this other weird African dialect and have an imaginary African friend, I would say otherwise. But a lot of past life. And so when she went through big radical life changes, you know, off and on between, I'd say, 18 and 24. After 24, one day she just blossomed into this girl. I went, oh, my God, is that who you are?
Yeah.
And she was traveling. This is a girl who would hardly leave home, you know, almost agoraphobic and very, very fearful of the world, but did a lot of experiential things, but always fearful. And then next thing I know, she still is OCD, but she can laugh at it.
Right.
But she has no memory of childhood. I, on the other hand, have memory of childhood right to when I was a year old or earlier. And it's not that we need to have all that memory. I'm just saying that, you know, yours started around 18 months, Howard, and I remember a lot of things. I have blanks, but I think they're preferred blanks, or I've remembered enough and I don't care. So it's fascinating. I think that past life stuff can affect how we're trying to segue into a new lifetime, a new body. And, you know, sometimes it's very stressful. And so there's a part that you prefer to forget it. It's kind of an overlap of one lifetime into another lifetime, and feeling safer and becoming like reborn within in the same body in this lifetime. So I think that time and memory. So again, those of you who've been regulars, you know that I see things as you can not only have this lifetime memory. That's all of what we've talked about so far. Mm-hmm. But you can also have cellular DNA memory that goes back many generations, probably forever. And then past life memory. And look, I can't really explain how time factors into all that, except that the cells of our body are extraordinary. And they contain everything we need to know. I know I've said this story before. When I was taking taekwondo in my late 30s, and I kept breaking the toes on my left foot, And I had been talking to this Asian fellow one day, and he said his people, after you've been to the doctor 3 times, they won't help you anymore until you understand why that keeps happening. And I went, whoa. Now, I broke that ankle when I was about 5 or 6 years old. So the left foot, I had tuned it out. It's fascinating. I just tuned it out because of the pain, you know. I broke it, and my father said, if you can walk on it, it ain't broke. Well, that's not necessarily true. And so there was some kind of emotional cellular connection that I disconnected from that foot. So I did a lot of meditations, went back into my memory. I re-experienced that and got, I could probably find better words, but I reconnected with that foot. And I haven't injured it since.
Well,
you know, little arthritis. I mean.
Well, and of course there's random chance that happens too, so. You know, you hate to be the guy that just through no fault of their own, the same wrist break 3 times in a row and goes in for the fourth. And I was like, I keep, working construction. Just, one time Bill hit me with a hammer, and the other time, the ladder broke under me, but anyway. And that's kind of the thing, too. I think we can kind of know that in life there's some kind of order from the chaos, right? We can kind of see patterns and things like that. We look for patterns in our memories, too, right, to stitch together some kind of narrative.
I have to mention what Dr. Mike has said here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If I can find it again.
For it, yeah.
I had kind of highlighted it, and I think
You want me to?
There's so many things going on in the chat some days, people. He says, my 2 cents worth. Time feels faster as we age because each unit of time becomes a smaller percentage of our lived life.
Mm-hmm.
And because, it skipped on me. Where are you? Because we form fewer novel memories.
Yeah, absolutely.
I totally concur with that.
Absolutely.
It's really a fascinating thing. And time, it goes faster. When you're a kid, you can't wait for the Saturday night dance, and it takes forever.
Yeah.
And, now you get excited about something, and you sit back and say, well, I don't know. Okay, I'm going to prepare dinner for 2 days, and everybody eat in 10 minutes. It's over.
Yeah.
It's like everything goes by fast.
It does.
Fewer events.
Yeah. But I have long kind of thought that, too, and I know it's I definitely agree, Dr. Mike, and glad he touched on it, too, because, we have, fewer novel memories, fewer new things are happening, we get into the patterns, the repetition, one day is just like the other, and they kind of meld together. When you're a child, everything is an experience that you have to process and fit into your growing, structures of what existence is, what reality is, what are the rules, what are the unspoken rules, what does it mean to be the human animal, all these kind of things build up, but, the older you get, especially when you get into full adulthood, middle age, and beyond, it is largely the same, and you start kind of classifying by eras, right? This is when we lived in this city, this is when I had this job, that kind of thing. But, yeah.
For whatever it's worth, folks, I just want to say, appreciate what you have in life while you have it. And it's not just about living from a place of gratitude, which we hope we do. It's also about being in the moment and being in the here now and choosing what kind of energy you want in your life. And what do you want to remember about this time in your life? And even if there's big challenges, even if there are big, oh, this is a bad week or a bad year, you get through that and take a different kind of attitude. It's like, well, I guess this is something to do. And I'm not saying we don't get stressed. I mean, the two top things that'll stress you anything is the breakup of a relationship and moving locations. The two most stressful things. And for people, because you invest so much into that, and it's like this major shift. And don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about the loss of somebody or anything. I'm just talking about you know, we've all been through at some point. So it's, you know, it's just kind of that be in the moment and experiencing it and looking at the creativity of it. You know, we've all been through some pretty difficult times and in life. You get through it with a few scars here and there. But you can explain all those scars. You know, women have an easier time of doing that because, oh yeah, all those stretch marks, yeah, those are babies. You know, and well, shrug it off. That's the way it goes. That's life. It just kind of be in the experience of life and look at what do I want to remember about this. Not just what I want to learn, but what do I want to remember? What's my takeaway? And you'll remember it differently later because you'll add to that experience. But time and memory, and there are some things that if you think about it today, it's like it happened yesterday, and it's just always going to be that way because it's just so profound.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what else? Have we got anything else here? And we'll start taking some cards. You know, time goes
fast. No, we got plenty. I mean, there's never enough time to talk about time, memory, and all the things that go into that. I mean, it's immense, you know. But, yeah, we are going to be pulling some cards. I know, Dr. Jerry, we got you first up. You know, good luck with the closing tomorrow. Also wanted to do a reminder that we do have the annual graduation ceremony this coming Saturday, the 3rd. It's going to be at 5 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time. So check your dashboard. If you're a student, you can see the countdown timer and, 5 o'clock Eastern and 9 o'clock GMT. So looking forward to that come Saturday. You know, let us know if you have any questions. Let us know if you want a link to join in and help celebrate, and we look forward to seeing everybody. Also, another little bit of business. Dr. Doug Kelly is going to be joining us again next week. So we're going to be looking, you know, we're going to have a discussion with him where we're going to answer questions that that students and members and people listening, you know, have had on their mind. People can ask questions in the live chat. Also, you can email any questions that you want to have him address, and you can send those emails to the admin@icmhchurch.org. So you can shoot those questions out, put them in chat, throw them on Facebook if you see him, and if you're in the One Planet community. We'll look forward to addressing those next Wednesday.
So just an insert here quickly. Dr. Mike has asked, if Skype is going away, what are we going to use going forward? It's not going to change for Mixler and the chat.
Right.
But it will likely be Teams, which is the offshoot of Skype. And,
Michael. Yeah, they're kind of folding, Teams into Skype. Zoom is fine, and, a lot of people work with it, but also if you don't have a business license, you have to pay for it, and it does have a time limit that wouldn't suit us. But Skype seems to be folding into Teams. But either which way, as long as I can get Dr. Vicky's wonderful voice into my computer system, it'll broadcast out. We're good to go.
You're funny. All right, we have Jerry first. Dr. Jerry.
All right. So, big card, Dr. Jerry, for you. I have number 6, boundaries. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it's necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me?
Well, 9 of diamonds here. Has everything to do with satisfaction around home, establishing yourself, finding that peacefulness. So I know you're saying you're looking at selling your house, Jerry. I would say be flexible, but also know your boundaries. So it's just, I know that that might sound like a contradiction in terms. What will bring you satisfaction? What are you willing to bend on? And yet still, what is your hard line of where your boundaries are? So that's just something for you to think about. But probably it could be applicable to other things that you're negotiating or talking to people about. So that's the message. We have Audra next.
All right, Audra coming in early. Audra, you get number 2, esteem and validation. Self-esteem is self-worth based on internal expectations and validation, not to be confused with them-esteem, which is self-worth based on external expectations and validation, that is, what others think. High self-confidence is not the same as high self-esteem. Self-validation is the highest regard that you give to yourself. Fully experience the truths of your own past.
I got the Fool, which is the first card in the Major Arcana. Esteem, validation, and Fool. You know, there's part of me that says you've learned how to not care. It's like being that free spirit. And I mean, we have to care about our dynamic and situations, but no longer being attached to how others might view us or judge us. You want to make a good impression. At the same time, they're going to see what they're going to see, you know, and it's kind of letting, you've let go of that. It's not like you are. I think you already have. And so that's a really good affirmation for you. By the way, Audra has said that they use Teams at work, Michael. So good.
Yeah, I got that too. I use both. I use Teams every day. We use it for the chat in the office and in the firm, and then for video conferences we use Zoom.
All
but
right.
It's all good stuff.
Ione, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Ione. For you, wow, these are all in the life leadership paragon suit. You have number 5, law of control. Differences are inevitable. Diversity is desirable. The law of control says you cannot change or control others, but you can have a positive impact or influence. Control only that to which you are entitled to control. Do not give unsolicited advice. Respect that everyone has the same rights to self-creation and decisions. You can accept present circumstances as they are, lobby for change, or leave.
Well, when you get the 7 of hearts, 7 of cups, that's everything to do with dispelling illusions, creating new dreams, what's reality versus fantasy. But I just had a flash of something. I'll make sure, if you can get to as close to the time of your birth as possible, and do a meditation projection for everything that you want for the coming year, It has this way of sending it out and then let it go. But be very specific about what you're kind of projecting for. You can't just a generality. Like, you know, I want the lotto win. Well, I mean, that could be $5. You know, you get a dollar on your ticket. So be very specific about what you want. So you've come out of your devolution now, going into your evolution, and this is when it's really good for PR and socializing. So law of control, you're going to feel like you're a better management, been better management now. It's going to be great.
All right.
I have Howard next.
All right, Howard, I pulled for you number 34, take and release ownership. Ownership and entitlement are not the same. Ownership is taking responsibility with a healthy attitude. Entitlement is expecting more than what is earned. Further, codependence is taking an unhealthy ownership for other people's problems and feelings. This may be a time to reflect on owning only what is yours and releasing the rest.
Well, I get the Hanged Man. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It's my favorite card. You know, one thing about Hanged Man is all about realization, enlightenment, awakenings. But there's always a sacrifice. So when you take and release, it's letting go of old stuff you don't need anymore so that there's room for new information. That can be as simple as that. Or having to give up an old belief system. So as these new ideas and new thoughts and new revelations, if you will, come to you, it means to say, you know, I guess I don't believe in that other stuff anymore. And that's just got to be okay. The minute you can let go of what you used to believe in, it's freedom. It's absolute the best freedom you'll ever experience. It's you're no longer attached to ego, pride, you know, all these kinds of things that attached us to a certain view of our own identity. So that's quite an affirmation for you too, Howard, going through that shift. It's awesome. May not feel very comfortable when you're going through it, but it's cool. Dr. Jeff.
So happy to see you. Dr. Jeff, I have for you number 24, truth. There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or a life situation. Yet, the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is truth in something or in a direction. Good one.
It is, and you got the Four of Clubs. I often say that the Four of Clubs, to me, in all of the tarot, is the only marriage card. But that could be a promise, an agreement, a commitment, obligation. There's many descriptives. But the truth, and what I see here with that Four of Clubs, is... you know when we... Okay, I need a minute here to find the words. It's when we let go of these layers of protection that we all have. You know, we all put up, you let go of those layers. We get closer to the truth and that self-protection. And it's like you might be falling deeper in love, Jeff, or finding things... they look brighter than they did, and you're freer than you were. Gee, I hope I'm not getting too personal with that. But it's getting closer to your own truths. That's which I think is awesome. But again, it has to do with all of your commitments too, and to your marriage, perhaps. You know. All right, Kevin. We have Kevin next.
Kevin, for you, I have number 9, empowerment. Taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution, in principle, for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you are whole, you are empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others.
Well, I love the hermit with that. The hermit is introspective, insightful. It looks closer to for the truth as well. It's okay that other people don't see what you see. And it's okay that we don't have to explain it. And it's okay that they walk away with their own take on it. And I don't know why I say that to you, Kevin, but empowerment is being able to also know enough about yourself to let external things go, even when you say, well, that's not quite what I meant, because everybody is subjective in taking it the way, you know, they interpret it. So it's you know, very often in readings, Michael, I'll say something, and of course I don't always know what I'm saying in readings, but somebody say, oh yeah, you know, that's this and this and this, and I look at them and I say, well, that's not what I said at all. But yeah, again, they're going through their own experience, and I say, well, I want you to take notes anyway, because you might see it differently later.
Yeah.
And I have to be okay with that. So it's kind of like that, Kevin. It's sticking by what I know for myself, but it's okay that you see it that way. So.
Yeah.
We have Donna next.
All right, Donna. For you, I have number 43, expediency. Timing is everything. Some things call for expediency. Others require us to slow down. If you have a problem, you can take care of it now or suffer longer and still take care of it later. It takes courage to face important matters when timing and opportunity fails, and wisdom to know when to slow down to assess the correct actions before acting promptly. For success in anything, do what you should do when you should do it.
You're going through some changes, Donna. I don't know much about you, you know, after these time that you've been on the program, but Page of Clubs. Now, that's a communication card, and it has everything to do with changes. How you're communicating yourself, how you're hearing others in their communication, and the expediency, when to enter the conversation, when not to, when to listen. Because you could have heard that same statement 100 times, but finally you're hearing it in a different way. And also, as you're speaking, you realize somebody's not hearing you. And it's like expediency is always about pick your spots. Know when to step back, know when to step forward. But it has everything to do with communication, because every time I'm thinking of you and I'm saying this, I'm seeing a bright light in my head. it's like a light bulb has come on, and that communication is taking on a whole new feeling, a whole new vision for you. And that's when the realizations start falling like dominoes, like one after the other. So you're taking inventory, no question. It's cool, though. I think it is. There's nothing more... Oh. On the soul's journey, there's nothing more empowering than knowing the truth of yourself. We don't like a lot of things in life. We don't have to. And we're often very disappointed in life. And we're even disappointed in ourselves, to be honest. That happens. But you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off and say, okay, what am I going to do with this? And I always go back to that feel, think, you know, sense, feel, think, and do. And maybe I decide to do nothing today, but doing nothing is a decision. And I take responsibility for deciding to do nothing today. And that's got to be okay, too. I'll revisit this later. But again, I go through what I intuitively feel or sense, you know, and what my emotions are, how I think, and then kind of analyze what I want to do about it. And I don't know if that applies to you, Donna. I just threw that out there because it came to mind as I was talking. I just roll with it when it happens.
Yeah, go with it.
Yeah, Damien's next, Michael.
All right, Damien. For you, we have a sequential poll. We have number 44, attitude and disposition. Enthusiasm and or an agreeable disposition, along with good manners, assures individual happiness that inevitably influences others. Drawing this card may indicate a time to review a change in attitude regarding someone or something in your life. This can be positive or negative. Be proactive. Ask yourself, how hard can it be? Can-do attitude makes it happen. Good one.
Oh, I'll say, in the Ten of Diamonds, that's big, Damien. That's the marketplace. Everything to do with buying, selling, finances, marketing, that's kind of it. So attitude and disposition. If you're embarking in new endeavors, I'd say this is a really good time for you.
Oh.
And of course, be selective. You know, it's always know your stuff and be selective of where you're going, but a really good time to negotiate.
That's really exciting.
Excellent. Yeah. And I think our final card of the night, if I haven't lost track, Michael, I think is Wendy, our card keeper.
It is. That's why I have as well. Wendy, I got it going for you. But first off, thank you for what you do. Wendy's been putting in chat what people got last week and if it was a repeat or when the last time they had it. Much appreciated for looking for those patterns and seeing those trends. So appreciate what you do, and you were missed. But in tonight, I have probably my favorite card. It's wild card number one for you, Paradox. A truth can be found in seemingly contradictory ideas. What may seem like a false proposition can be a set of new ideas and ways of thinking. Your solution may lay in the opposite direction than you think. Keep in mind that the cosmos works in equals and opposites. Not all truths lay in common opinions. This may be a time for contrarian thinking and opening your mind to what may not make sense at first. Thus, new perspectives are discovered.
Well, I'm not sure how this applies. It's the Emperor, Wendy. The Emperor is always about authority, generally positions of power, something or someone who presents themselves as who can take care of things. You know, that kind of character, personality. He can take care of things, or it can take care of this for you. And paradox says, you know, you got to look at things both ways, and kind of assess who you are in that kind of a situation, if that's the way you want to go or not. I don't know. I feel like there's a power play in motion in some regard, and maybe it's about how you assess it. I really like paradox too, but sometimes it can be very unsettling because we have to have a really clear mind about how we move forward. So I think this is about some kind of authority figure or situation, you know, a situation that likes to think it has or know more than you. So, you know, use your own judgment as you go forward. Sometimes we just have to intuitively feel our way through, right?
Absolutely.
Because there's no answer.
I think that's...
Well, because we don't know what we know until we know it.
Well, that's true. And to be frank, a lot of times we don't know what we know, even when we think we know it. So, I mean, yeah, it's... I got to say that I kind of feel like feeling my way through life is most of what I do. But it seems to work out so far. Hey, yeah.
Oh, Wendy says she gets it. Okay, she said it makes sense to her.
All right. Very cool.
Thank the gods. And by the way, I spelled gods G-A-W-D.
Well, there you go.
It's like I'm presently still challenged by this painting of Odin with the wolves, one wolf and one dark wolf. And, of course, I haven't painted the ravens on his shoulders yet. And my friend was over for coffee the other day, and she said, "Are you going to make those ravens white?" I said, "Oh, don't put ideas in my head." Oh, I mean, they were going to be black ravens. That was my intention. But now I'm thinking, well, what about one white raven and one black raven?
I mean,
you know,
is there such a thing as white ravens?
Well, I think the next one will be Thor.
Okay.
So this is where that's where the gods. You see,
short, stocky, redheaded bruiser of a guy.
Yeah, kind of. I don't always see him short, so. The albino ravens. Well, there is a story in my experience with indigenous cultures. In the very beginning of time, the ravens were white. Huh. And as darkness fell upon the earth, ravens became black. And the prophecy was, when the ravens begin to appear white, truth is emerging once again, and there will be this new beginning of time. There we go with time. And in fact, there have been, in the last few years, some white ravens. And especially on Vancouver Island, there is a little family of albino ravens. And it's not the first time, I guess, since then that they've been spotted. So it's kind of like the white buffalo, you know, which would be the rise of the indigenous people. And, you know, all those stories. So the ravens are able to, like, symbolically, there's the raven, the crow, and the magpie. They're all connected. The raven knows the secrets of all times, all time, the way past, and knows the future. The crow travels between the worlds. It's able to, it can travel through the veils. And the magpie is the trickster. And they are kind of the comedian of all three. And they're more earthbound, and they like to play So that's the story. I like those old stories, Michael. Hmm.
They're interesting.
Yeah.
They definitely, kind of harken back to something primal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every indigenous society, which has always been kind of a thing because, to think about societies, again, brings it back to time where, all of our concepts of nationality and ethnicity and what we would call race and all of these things are very, very temporary, very localized, human beings have been around for hundreds of thousands of years, and these concepts we have are very recent, relatively speaking, especially so. Yeah. But
Wendy's asking if they're an endangered species, and of the white ravens. I said, and I do know that they're protected where they are. They're not classed as endangered. Dr. Mike is saying they do exist, but they're extremely rare.
I was just going to call you a liar. I thought, you're making stuff up. That's like a dove or something.
Audra's saying, according to her grandma, she's the magpie. The true love of my life, who's been gone to the last 10 years, he was a magpie. And I'll tell you, we had the funniest stories. He was very talented, very insightful with people, good with people, had a real comedian side to him. And I'll tell you a little story. We were in his backyard one day having an argument, and there was always magpies in his yard, always. They even nested in his yard. So he and I are having an argument, and I'm going to use better, nicer terminology than we used at the time, okay? But a magpie flew over and pooped on his head. Well, that killed the argument, and we couldn't stop rolling on the floor. So it was kind of funny. But magpies are fun. Very talented.
Interesting.
Yeah, and they do like to play tricks on people. They always have secrets. That's the thing about trickster. They like secrets.
Oh, I think we all like secrets in our own way, don't we? We all can be a trickster from time to time. Isn't that right, Dr. Vicky?
Yeah, maybe. And she said, always noisy and love sparkly things. That's true, Audra.
Good stuff. Well,
all right. I guess it's that time, Michael.
It is. It is that time of the evening. So it's been a great discussion. I had so many just on the nose bad puns about time and thing. I think I only used really one of them. We just didn't have the time. But, we're looking forward to Dr. Doug Kelly being with us next week. Again, I'm going to put it in chat as well. If you have any questions you want to set ahead of time, or you can ask in chat then, or you can send them to admin@icmhchurch.org. Let's get that in the chat there. But yeah, been a great discussion, and we can't forget also about the graduation coming up on Saturday. I know we have some recent graduates this year that we're looking forward to celebrating with, so please join us. That's 5 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock GMT, and can't wait to see you.
Well, can I just add this? Magpies are one of six species that know themselves when they see themselves in the mirror. Thank you, Dr. Mike. There you go, Audra.
All right. Good addition.
I know. I love that.
Dr. Mike had also thrown out that the white ravens often don't survive very long in the wild due to their visibility and fragile health. So we're getting all kinds of wildlife knowledge. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I can probably take a metaphysical take on that, too. There isn't enough light on the earth yet that they're surviving longer.
There you go.
All right, Michael.
Stupid doves are taking all that white energy.
I know.
SOBs. But going to be some good stuff out there. So can't wait for everybody to join us next week. Can't wait for everybody to join us Saturday, for that matter. And any last thoughts, Dr. Vicky, before we sign off?
Nah, don't let them push you around out there, people.
There you go. Well, again, thank you. I love seeing everybody each and every week. Appreciate your contributions and can't wait to catch up with you again. Till then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.